Good afternoon, everybody. This is the Toe Meat Leather Podcast. I'm Logan, your host, as always, and I'm here today with our producer, Tommy. How you doing today, Tommy?
I'm doing good. It's been a long time since we've done this. I'm happy to be back in the groove.
Yeah, I'm glad to see you again. I notice it's shirtless o'clock wherever you are at.
It's always shirtless o'clock wherever I'm at.
All right, well, we're going to do a quick draft talk. Tommy, I know this is a new situation for you. What with Tampa Bay not actually trying to get the first draft pick this year, but I'm kind of curious. We're looking at the top five teams. We've got Tennessee, Cleveland,
San Diego, Dallas, and Jacksonville.
Is San Diego really third? I thought they were fourth. Damn.
I have third right here. Yeah, San Diego's third.
I keep second-guessing myself with that because a lot of those teams should not be that bad.
Well, somebody has to be, and I think they just got the short end of the stick there.
Yeah, with injuries and everything. Now, that said, I've watched ESPN, and as expected, they said that probably three of those teams should pick quarterbacks with their first-round pick. Do you think that would be a smart move by their GM?
When you're looking at the five teams there, I think when you start talking about that, you got to look at each team. Cleveland, we'll leave Cleveland to the end because I don't even know what to do with them. Tennessee has a quarterback, though. I mean, they invested so much in Mariota, and to give him just 1 year and move on would not be a good choice. And he did well last season. I mean, their issues was not from the quarterback. So then you go to Cleveland, which honestly, Cleveland should just draft anybody and everybody they can because they're just in trouble. San Diego, I think San Diego has a lot more issues on the defensive side. And I think there's a lot more defensive talent in the draft right now. So I think they need to fill some of the gaps on defense more so. When you look at the Cowboys, I mean, Romo isn't a terrible quarterback. I know he's basically flip a coin and people either say he's amazing or terrible and nobody in the middle. But honestly, he's serviceable and they could plug in some other holes and do pretty well with him. And then Jacksonville, I mean, they've got Gabbert. So there's nothing you really need to do there. So I don't think any of them, except maybe Cleveland, should draft a quarterback. But then again, they signed RG3. So it sounds like to me that they're not going to. So I wouldn't be surprised seeing a quarterback fall a pretty good way down. You know, maybe as far as eight when Jared Goff might go to Philadelphia. Before that, I mean, maybe – well, I guess the 49ers at seven is the other one. So I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see a quarterback until seventh or eighth pick.
Yeah, I can totally understand Philadelphia, seeing as how they don't even have another pick until the third round. It kind of blows my mind how ESPN seems to think that the Browns need to get back up to RG3, and then San Diego and the Cowboys need to get a backup just in case there are more injury problems this year around. But I don't know. From your perspective, does this make a draft more interesting? Obviously, ESPN seems to think that you need to have a QB focus to draw in the viewership, but does this make it more fun for you to watch, knowing that there aren't going to be as many QBs on the board, so you've got to pay attention to a lot of these non-skill players?
Well, honestly, the thing, I think that plays into it. I think there are a decent number of quarterbacks that are in the NFL right now, floating around that are serviceable guys. And I mean, you look at what Arizona did last year with Carson Palmer, who has never wowed anybody really. So they've proven that you don't need a quarterback to be a contender. What's really going to be interesting for me is the defensive end. Honestly, I think if you were Googling trying to figure out who people are going to be drafting, I would pull up the top 50 rankings of whatever your favorite site is, NFL, ESPN, CBS, any one of those. And then I would pull up that same site's top 50 defensive line prospects. And honestly, I think they're interchangeable because there's not really a team that's completely set on the defensive line. I think it's just such a glaring hole. And you look at what the Broncos did this year with that defensive line and the amount of disruption they caused I think that's kind of where everybody's going to try and just look on that other side of the ball, and specifically up front.
Yeah, I like how you brought up the Denver Broncos, because that's a team that had a big name quarterback, but one that didn't really produce the way you would expect him to. So it kind of shows how if you've got a good team surrounding you, you don't need to have a big talent necessarily at QB. You know, I can't speak to the leadership position, but as far as the statistics, he obviously wasn't putting up the numbers last year in Peyton Manning. Now, we don't have our other sports writers here with us tonight. I'm going to count that as a blessing. So let's go ahead and talk about their teams. Let's start off with Nigel. Nigel's got the Lions, and they're an impossible team to get a hold on from my perspective, because they seem to try and do something to make themselves better every year, and yet they consistently get worse and worse and worse. We're looking at the board. They obviously, Megatron retired. They've got issues on the D-line. They've got issues on the O-line. Their running game was atrocious last year. Who do you think the Detroit Lions should look into drafting?
Well, Detroit's sitting at 16. But they're a team that I could see trying to make a move to trade up to get somebody. I don't know exactly where they're going to be looking to land, but I think their biggest need is offensive tackle right now. I feel like, and I believe it's the right side tackle that they really need to shore up and fill that spot. So maybe looking at somebody like a Laramie Tunsil out of Ole Miss, and kind of keeping an eye on him and who else above them they might want to take. I think that's kind of where they're going to be looking. If they don't trade up to get somebody like that, I think they're just going to be somebody, one of those teams that when 16 comes around, they're taking the best player on the board, because they do have a couple needs. They do need another defensive tackle. They do need another cornerback, and they do need a linebacker. So there's plenty of spots there that they can just kind of sit and wait and see who's available, and not throw away resources to get an earlier pick and still come out pretty well. So it'll be interesting to see if they identify offensive tackle as that big of a need for them that's worth trading up, or if they're just going to sit and take the best player off the board, because they do have a couple holes they need to fill.
See, a lot of the fan blogs I'm reading actually say they should go ahead and take a defensive tackle, and I count that as part of Ndamukong Suh syndrome, where I just feel like they can't get over the fact that they lost Suh all that long ago, and they'll never get better until they get another beast down on the defensive line. That said, I'm seeing two picks for the 16 potentially, and that would be Tyler Decker out of Ohio State. Alternatively, Andrew Billings out of Baylor. Now, Andrew's a defensive tackle, and then Tyler's a is it Tyler or Taylor? It's whatever. Taylor's an O-line out of Ohio State. And I don't know why a Michigan team would ever draft a guy from Ohio State, but I feel like that would be the big improvement there if they could get him in and make him work with the system, because they need to give somebody in front of Amir Abdullah that can block.
Absolutely. And that's why I think the offensive line is the only position that's worth trading up for and taking a look. If you look at the best tackles out there right now, the best one on the board is going to be Laramie Tunsil from Ole Miss. And he's probably the one that's worth going. After that, you're looking more at Ronnie Stanley out of Notre Dame, Jack Coughlin out of Michigan State, and Taylor Decker out of Ohio State. All four of those guys are well built. They're all, you know, 6'5", 6'6", 3'10", right around there. They're all first-round guys. And I don't think the drop-off from Laramie Tunsil to Taylor Decker is really that big of a deal, so it could be worthwhile for them to sit. Whereas if they're looking on the other side of the ball, if they're looking at the defensive tackle side, I think it's the same thing. There's about four guys they could pick, and they couldn't really go wrong. And, you know, just like with all drafts, you can pick the best guy on the board on draft day, and the number eight guy in that position is the one who actually breaks out and becomes a star. So I don't think there's any need so strong that they would trade up for outside of offensive tackle just to get Laremy Tunsil. But if you look above them, they'd have to trade pretty high up to go ahead and get that.
I like the fan blog I was reading that says that they're going to draft Jake Coker and he's going to usurp the current quarterback. Yeah, because honestly, I have not been impressed recently, and I don't think that losing Megatron is going to make them look any better through the passing game. But I don't know. Do you think they have a? I hate to keep bringing up the quarterback game. I think they'd be more likely to draft another weapon at wide receiver or tight end than quarterback, you think?
Not in the first round. I think they.
Well, no. I'm not serious. Not in the first round. Like down the line, like.
Oh yeah, second, third round. I definitely think they got to start looking at skill positions because, I mean, they've got Ameer Abdullah and Theo Riddick backing him up, which isn't a bad backfield, honestly. Obviously, it could get better, but that's not a bad place to be. At wide receiver, losing Calvin, I mean, you can't replace him. And they have Golden Tate, which I've never been a believer in Golden Tate. So, obviously, wide receiver is a great place for them to start looking. But if they can't block on the offensive line for Ameer Abdullah, a wide receiver's not going to do them any good. I mean, Calvin Johnson is a freak of nature, and his numbers still have people questioning whether he deserves to be in the NFL Hall of Fame when he becomes eligible, just because he never had the team that could support that level of talent. So,
yeah, it sucks when you see something like that go down. I really feel like he could have had some more years. Oh, well, moving on. Let's talk about Andrew's team now. So this one actually suffers from the exact opposite problem that Detroit suffers from. Arizona is pretty solid all around. They don't have any glaring weaknesses. I read sports articles that said that they should draft everything between a safety, a D lineman, an O lineman, and a quarterback. So they're kind of all over the place. They don't have a ton of draft picks anyway. I think they've only got two in the first three rounds. What is your opinion for Arizona? What do you think they need to pick up on?
Well, honestly, Arizona is a little different than a lot of other teams with the way Bruce Arians runs his roster and the way he runs the game. And he's all about high risk, high reward, and does things a little different. So I could even see them starting to draft with that in mind too, doing things different than a lot of other people. They're great at wide receiver. Their running backs are pretty solid with David Johnson and Andre Ellington backing him up. And Chris Johnson's out there too, if I'm not mistaken.
It's a three-headed
monster. They've got a pretty large staple that they don't have to worry about injuries and stuff like that. So I think basically they're just going to look and pick up somebody, either a tight end or on the defensive side of the ball, and just pick up whoever the best person is on the board at that point. And when you're talking about playoff teams, you're talking about pick 29. So at that point, I feel like the strategy isn't as big of a deal. Unless you're trading up, you're basically just picking the best player on the board at that point. And moving on. And if you want to look at any team who does that really well, that's going to be New England over the years. Is they know how to pick in those low areas where it's a name that you may not necessarily know as well, but he's clearly the best player on the board after the top 28 guys are gone. So,
yeah, how much of that falls on the GM versus the coach at that point? Because I think a lot of people credit New England with Belichick being the one who makes the decisions behind those picks. But like you said, I'm not sure there's a lot of thought involved with drafting the most talented person left on the board.
Well, honestly, I think it all comes down to the discussions and the relationship between the coaching staff and the front office staff, that GM and coach relationship. And if they're not on the same page, drafting is the least of your concerns, because they need to be on the same page through drafting, through free agency, and through what the plan is the coach has on the field, as well as the resources the GM has access to and the type of players he's going to be able to get his hands on. So there has to be a give and take from both sides, unless you have somebody like a Belichick who's just, you know, runs the show top to bottom and is able to do that. But there's not many people who can handle the front office and coaching by themselves. So I think when you start looking at that, it has to be a group effort and a lot of conversations about what they want to achieve on the field and what pieces are going to give them the best chance to do that.
Right. Unless you're Jerry Jones, in which case you just make up your mind and make a pick.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, Tommy, I'm just going to let you tell us about your team because I think you know more about Tampa Bay than I would ever care to. Obviously, they're moving up in the world, which is better than I've seen out of a lot of teams in Florida. They're actually making steady progress now that they've got a good QB in hand. What do you think they need to do next year to really improve?
Well, Tampa's actually in a really good position as far as skill positions. Their wide receivers are solid. They finally have a quarterback who's worth developing. And, you know, they have a quarterback they trust so much they fired their head coach just to keep the guy who's training him on. So that just shows you how much the front office kind of believes in Jameis Winston and what he's going. So I think they're going to build around him. But honestly, it's not the offense. Their defense was just, it was painful to watch last year. If they're going to draft an offensive lineman, probably a tackle to defend Jameis on that side. Otherwise, they're just looking to the other end. And their biggest glaring gap is they need a defensive end, like probably 20 of the teams in the draft do. Gerald McCoy can't do it himself, and they prove it time and time again. And it's really easy to defend him if, you know, they put four guys on the line and only one of them is able to make a move and beat anybody on your offensive line. So they really need a pass rusher, somebody that can do well. And sitting at the ninth pick, they have a shot at getting somebody pretty good. So, you know, you got DeForest Buckner coming out of Oregon and Shaq Lawson coming out of Clemson and Noah Spence, who's somebody who lit up some people at Eastern Kentucky. So there's some pretty good guys up there. I think if they can get Shaq Lawson or DeForest Buckner, I'd be pretty happy. I don't think between Joey Bosa, DeForest Buckner, and Shaq Lawson, I don't think all three of them make it to nine. I'd be surprised if two of them are on the board at pick nine because everybody needs one right now. So I think that's where they're going to go, look at the defensive end side. But if not, they're going to do the same thing as we kind of talked about before with Detroit and take an offensive lineman or best player on the board.
That makes a lot of sense. I think, like you said, the defensive end, defensive tackle, those are going to be the positions that everybody's going to be looking to shore up on. Unless you're Dallas and you're deciding that you need to take a cornerback or something. I think the majority of people are going to be looking at defensive tackle and defensive end. Let's see. Or, you know, if you're Atlanta, for example, and you decide to do something stupid like draft another wide receiver. I don't know. Oh, so let's talk about this. I know you've been doing a lot of research on it. Roberto Aguayo, probably the best player in the draft, certainly at his position. For how many, I think is a 96 percentile as far as making kicks? It's insane. But you're looking at the draft and you're thinking he might not even get drafted till like the third or fourth round. How do you quantify a talent like that at the kicker position?
Well, so when you look at Robert Aguayo, he's like the best kicker that's ever come out of college. His numbers are unreal. His percentage, he's got all the clutch kicks in there too. Yeah, he had a couple issues throughout his career in his last year as a junior, mainly that blocked field goal against Georgia Tech. But up until then, I mean, it was just unreal the amount of times he could do it. The problem is when you talk about kickers, it's such a funny position to talk about. I think if you actually look at the 32 kickers from last season, nine of them were ever drafted. So the other remainder of that, so whatever, 23 kickers were never drafted out of college. They were just signed up as undrafted free agents. So it just shows you that you can find a kicker if you need to. Now, if you start talking about the talent level and is he worth it being that much better, the only person you can kind of compare him to is going to be Sebastian Janikowski, who also came out of Florida State and was picked up by the Raiders. And, you know, is the 17th overall pick in 2000, and he had one Pro Bowl year in 13 years as a kicker. So just kind of shows you that kickers are head cases and a huge risk, and there's 150 of them to pick from out there that are undrafted. So if you really feel confident in what he can do, maybe he's worthwhile in a third round, but I would just let him go and find somebody else. I don't think his ability over another kicker is worth spending a draft pick outside of maybe if he's on the board at the fifth round, I'd take him. But outside of that, probably not.
Which is a damn shame for one of the best talents we've ever seen. A guy's got, like, a metal boot or something that he wears out there. He can kick it from 70 yards, I'm pretty sure. But no, it's just a damn shame when you see talent like that that's not going to come off the board or just going to struggle to find a pick. But
when you look at him, too, the thing that worries me is if you look at 2013 and 2014 – his first 2 years as a freshman and sophomore, he went 21 for 22 and 27 for 30 on his field goal attempts, and he didn't miss an extra point. And actually, he didn't miss an extra point throughout the entirety of college. And, you know, he kicked 94 extra points his freshman year and never missed one. So from that point, in those short-range, low-pressure kicks, he's unbeatable. But when you look at his last season, he was only 21 of 26, which is around 80%, which is still better than just about any other kicker that you'll see if they can maintain 80% through college. But seeing that drop off would worry me, because what's going to happen when he transitions to the next level?
I don't know. And we saw with a player like Blair Walsh, who actually did get drafted, he ended up costing the Vikings their playoff chances when he missed that kick at the end of the season. Maybe the trick is you need to invest in a holder, not a kicker. That makes more sense, right?
Yeah, and those are just backup quarterbacks anyway, right? So maybe back to your original point, you're right. You do need to draft a quarterback, but not to play quarterback, to hold the ball for your kicker.
Yeah, draft Jared Goff just to go out there and hold the ball. I like that idea. I like that idea. Well, do you think maybe they could train Derrick Henry to do that? Because Alabama running backs have not had a good history recently doing well in the draft. So I feel like Henry's going to end up going with a relatively early draft pick for him. But do you think he's even got the talent to make it as a running back in the NFL?
When you look at Derrick Henry, the thing that worries about me is he's a one-cut and upfield type of guy. I wouldn't necessarily trust him with a first-round draft pick. If he's there on the second round, yeah, I'd pick him up. But I just don't see somebody who literally is a one-cut and upfield and was always behind Alabama's line as somebody I want to trust a first-round draft pick to.
Makes sense. All right. Well, I'm just going to cut to the last question we got today. So the NCAA championship is tonight or tomorrow. I don't know. Our listeners aren't going to know what we're talking about. They don't fucking know when this was recorded. So who fucking smartasses out there trying to triangulate the dates over here. So I'm curious, who do you think is going to win the championship? I'm betting, since the sky is blue, I've got my opinion. And since we drive on tar roads, I think I got a general idea of who I would pick. But I want to know what your thoughts are.
Honestly, watching what Villanova did to Oklahoma, I was just absolutely surprised, and I would never want to play them. And also, my biggest litmus test is they beat Georgia Tech earlier in the season. So, you know, they're a really good team, because that's our litmus test is whether or not they can beat Georgia Tech, because they had such a good year. but no, I think North Carolina's going to win it, because watching them play Syracuse last night, and honestly, those were the only two games that I actually paid attention to in the tournament, or the Final Four ones, I think North Carolina will beat them. So but that just shows you how much my opinion means if I only watch two games of the tournament.
Yeah. Well, I haven't watched any games of the tournament, so you're telling me Michigan State doesn't have a chance.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think I'm going to side with the Tar Heels on that one as well. I just, the talent level that they've got going on there, it's hard to imagine them. That said, Villanova made it a hell of a lot farther than I think anybody gave them credit for. Hell, I remember listening to the PTI guys back in the middle of the year, and they were like, Villanova's not even going to make it past, you know, the Sweet 16. So, obviously come a lot farther than that. I got high hopes. I just want it to be a good game. If they get blown out by 40 again, it's not going to be worth watching at all. I'll just turn it over to League of Legends. That'll be worth watching.
There you go.
All right. Tommy, you got any call-outs and shout-outs before we close out?
Yeah, my shout-out goes to Georgia Tech Basketball for finally firing Brian Gregory. And my call-out goes to Georgia Tech Basketball for still having to pay their coach from before that longer than they have to pay Brian Gregory. So Brian Gregory's buyout will be over in 2 years, but they're still paying Paul Hewitt for another 3 years. So terrible, terrible contract negotiation, but good job for them for getting out of it and taking the plunge there. My other shout-out is going to be to college football. You've been gone for too long, and you need to come back because I need some more college football in my life.
Yeah, I'm slowly losing my mind over here. My shout-out will go to the best Cleveland GM of all time, Kevin Costner, in the movie Draft Day. I don't know why they got rid of him, but he was doing a much better job in that movie than whoever the current GM is doing is.
So, serious question, Logan. If you are Cleveland, would you fire your current GM and hire Kevin Costner? And do you think he could do a better job drafting in the real world?
Honestly, man, I think a trained monkey could probably do a better job than whoever they've got currently. But the trick with Cleveland is interesting because I'm not sure that they've just got a loser's mentality. It doesn't matter who they draft. It doesn't matter what they're doing. They don't seem to get out of this trend of, you know, trying to spark up conversations and getting out of it. It seems like the owner is really more in it for the money than he is for the winning. And when you have a team like that, it's like, well, if you don't want to win, you're never going to win. You know, that's the problem. And I think a lot of teams were like that. You know, Jacksonville was like that when they were doing their decisions to bring in, like, NFL Red Zone onto their TV. It's like, if you're making that decision, you're clearly not thinking in terms of, well, we want to win. You're thinking in terms of, well, we're going to lose anyway, so we might as well make as much money as we fucking can. And that's what I see is wrong with Cleveland. Honestly,
so do you draft LeBron James with your first round pick if you're Cleveland?
I still think that would be, yeah, that would be the best way to go for them. They can draft him as a tight end, or hell, bring him in as a quarterback's coach. You know, that's what he wants to do in the NBA anyway. I think if they make him the coach at every team in Cleveland, I think people will show up to a lot more fucking games.
Yeah, so they'll make money and they'll probably win more games too. So that sounds like a win-win for that town, and we all know they need it.
He's a great passer. You could put him in at quarterback, and then he could, like, go out and tight end and catch the ball. He's great at everything. I think that what we're saying is they really need to clone LeBron James. I think
22 of them.
Yeah, and what with Steph Curry taking over in the NBA, his time is short anyhow. So I think he needs to pick up a new sport. All right, and my call out will go to pizza. Pizza, why do you got to be so tasty and yet be so greasy? It's like, that's how you can tell you're getting old. It's like, you can't eat pizza anymore. It just soaks up your insides. It's not a good feeling, man. Anyway.
We've been away from this for too long.
To all our listeners, thank you as always for listening to our scintillating conversations. If you have any questions for us so we don't have to talk about pizza, feel free to give us a shout out. Shoot us an email at toemeatleather@gmail.com. Again, that is toemeatleather@gmail.com. Tommy, thank you as always for joining me.
Anytime, Logan. Thanks for having me.
All right. Have a good rest of your week. Good night.